In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
This is Jim Hoffman, Josh. When Josh Knapp is with us daydreaming, and this is why...
Well, I didn't hear you do the intro. I'm sorry. I got another call, little technical difficulties.
Right.
Josh Knapp.
Right. Josh Knapp. Daydreaming.
Not daydreaming. I was answering the phone with Dave Brenner.
Yeah. Okay.
Who is on the other line.
Well, I'm going to bring Dave in. So we can begin the show. Of course, while I'm doing that, I want to remind everybody that we are sponsored by EMS Manager. You can get a free trial of their innovative and easy-to-use software. Go check it out at emsmanager.net. And I think we have Dave on the line with us now.
I'm here. How are you, Jim? Hi, Josh.
Hey,
Dave. All righty. Let's see what else we got going on today. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter at EMSSafe. And we're on Facebook at facebook.com/EMSOfficeHours. So,
somebody stop playing with your microphone.
That must be Dave. Dave must have been
Dave
fidgeting.
Boy, it's as soon as the temperature falls, we all stop thinking.
No, not we. I'm not we. I'm always thinking.
People in the north.
Yeah. Let's see. So, I guess a few things today. I know, Josh, you had sent me a message about one of the topics you wanted to talk about tonight.
Sure did. It sort of riled some up, and my wife...
About that a little bit. I read the article that you're talking about, so I guess we'll talk a little bit about that. I'm a little distracted because I'm trying to get the chat opened up as well as we're yammering away here. But, yeah.
Okay. Do it. Get your stuff.
No.
It's okay. We only put this show together once a week.
You can talk over me.
You can schedule to do something else today.
Yeah. Okay.
It's okay.
All right.
I won't guilt you the way you guilt me.
So I saw a lot of, there's a lot of going on lately that I've been sort of catching my eyes on Facebook and Twitter, things like that, EMS-wise.
And the Twitterverse?
The Twitterverse, the EMS-verse. Just some interesting sort of things going on there. I tell you, I don't know if you guys ever noticed that when the weather starts getting cold, ambulances start breaking down. And, like, every year it's like this cycle of everybody's surprised.
It's either when it's very hot or very cold, which is sort of normal for...
Yeah, but, I mean...
Any vehicle, but, yeah.
There's no pre-planning. It's like they just go right into the summer or right into the winter. And, if they break down, we'll fix them. Otherwise, we're not going to worry too much about it.
Well, the question is...
And then, of course, inevitably, they always break down.
Do you think it's willful negligence? Do you think it's just poor planning?
I think it's willful looking other way because it costs money. And if we don't have to spend the money, if we can try not to spend it, we will do that. But, of course, that in the end ends coming back to bite you in the ass, because if you're fixing vehicles all winter long or all summer long, you probably spend more money doing that. Of course, there's a lot of agencies out there that do a lot of, maintenance, throughout the year to try to avoid it,
But even that's a choice. I mean,
yeah.
I come from a larger shop, so to say, and we have regular PMs for all our vehicles, which is good. But there is a priority to what gets PM'd. And, you know, oil changes, air filters, things like that. Certainly do. Tires, brakes, things like that that are directly involved. Shock absorbers, maybe not so much.
And I always, I don't know, man. I always found that the vehicles start to break down. It's you know, things like overheating. It's things like...
Right, and we're really good on that. You know, but I've known a lot of other shops, and I see it on Facebook and people who post that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. You know, some of the posts they're like on Facebook
are... Yeah, some posts. I mean, I don't know. I've never been... I mean, I've had a few... You know, one place I worked for years ago when I first started EMS was sort of operating on a wing and a prayer type thing, you know. You had issues with vehicles breaking down constantly for one reason or another, and, you know, the heat's not working in the back or whatever the case may be, and it's in other places that I've worked, it's been better, you know. You know, it's some of the pictures I've seen that they've posted on Facebook and things like that are just so.
Well, how about the picture
crazy
that you posted this summer?
Yeah, with the duct tape and the
duct tape air conditioning system, right?
Going to the front of the bus or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. I know it is. It's little. It's. I don't know. I guess a lot of people out there, they pre-plan and they, like you said, they do PM on the vehicle. They try to keep up on it. And unfortunately, for most places, you know, the ambulances are running constantly. You know, even places that don't have that busy of a call, you know, call volume, it's still okay. They got to jump up. They got to stop the truck up. It's in the garage, maybe, or sitting outside of garage, and you know, it hasn't been running for a few hours, and now you got to start it right up and bolt out the door.
Right, and that's the roughest way to be.
Yeah, there's no warm-up going on for the truck or anything. So, and then you got other places where the truck runs constantly the entire time, you know, and never gets a break. But at least it's warm.
But going back to, you know, what your point was, is that a lot of organizations, you know, when the truck breaks down, they're surprised. Like, what do you mean the spit and bailing wire didn't work?
You ever get, I don't know about you, but I had times when the truck would break down and they would act like it was my fault. What? What do you mean? What'd you do?
Right.
I was sitting in a driver's seat.
Right.
I was sitting in the passenger
seat. You were obviously...
I had the heat on. God forbid, it was freezing out. And I had the heat on to keep the windows defrosted. It's just funny.
You know, there's a reason that they call that part of your organization fleet services.
Yeah.
Because there is a fleet that has to be managed.
Yeah.
But how many places have, you know, a fleet of ambulances?
Sure. But I will say this. I'm going to put it back, of course, on myself and back on the people that you know operate the vehicles, us, the providers, that there's an element of things that we should be doing as well, and that means checking oil and checking antifreeze levels and checking power steering fluid and stuff like that.
And not putting it off on the next crew.
Right. You know, open the trunk, you know, open the hood, take a look and see where your fluids are at. If you see anything leaking all over the place, check
on
the
trunk. Well, there's a good argument not to do that.
Hold on. What does it take you, 15 minutes to do it as part of your you know, check sheet?
For a guy who drives.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Jim,
go ahead.
In which class, your EMT class or your paramedic class?
I knew.
Thank you.
You know what? That's union talk.
That's
no.
not. I don't belong to the union. I recognize that if the mechanics take care of the ambulance, I'll take care of the patients. If they don't take care of the patients, I won't take care of the ambulance. I promise.
All right, but you know what? Okay. All right. Everyone's got to be a smartass. Listen, here's the thing, though. The ambulance.
Josh paid me $5 to say
that. I'm sure he did. I should look at the Skype private chat and see if he's typing you to antagonize me. You know, on the same side, I mean, you can also say, you know what? The vehicle
Dave's able to antagonize you all on his own, Jim.
You can say that the vehicle is part of your equipment, much like the life pack and everything else, and you have to check those at the beginning of your ship to make sure that the battery is live and that you can send a 12 lead or that you can do, you check your glucometer, you know, to make sure that's, you know what I mean?
I'm just not trained to check power steering fluid.
Well, I wasn't either.
But there's a
Well, I was trained. My father trained me growing up. It was called, this is the power steering fluid. This is what you have to check and, you know.
Really? In a diesel engine, do you check power steering fluid when it's running or when it's off?
I check it when it's off. I'm not saying I'm perfect.
Or when it's hot or when it's cold.
What I'm saying is that you check it.
To see that it's even there?
They make sure something's there. If Misha is wet and it's in some sort of container that is self-contained, you know.
You remember model airplanes, model cars? When I would put them together, I'd always have extra parts.
Right, and I'm not saying it's wrong if you check the ambulance. You have something extra after you're done.
I got news for you. I used to build cars, real cars, and when I put them together, I always had extra parts.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, and things ran just fine. So, there's a whole,
I'll report it's pulling to the left or it's making a weird sound or, you know, it's just bouncing too much.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's everybody's responsibility because safety is part of your rig check.
And I understand you guys are saying, too, as far as not being trained to, you know, check these fluids, not being trained, as like you said, Josh, you know, what is check when the vehicle is running hot, what's check when it's in park, what's check when it's in, you know, neutral, all that good stuff. I get all that. But I don't know. I still think that there's a it's not like it's something that, you know, you should say, well, it's not part of my job type thing.
And I don't think we're that far apart, Jim, honestly.
No, I think I understand that. I mean, listen, I knew a guy that couldn't put the patient on the hospital stretcher, from the ambulance stretcher to the hospital stretcher, because he wasn't trained in how to use the hospital stretcher.
But he was trained to move a person to the hospital stretcher.
Yeah,
lifting and moving patients.
But they said, this is the reason why I'm telling you right now, what happened was, is that this is a guy who was a medic for quite a long time, and he ended up, went to a hospital, was moving the stretcher, it ran over a nurse's foot in the process, and the nurse went and sued him and his hospital for that, saying that he wasn't trained in how to operate the stretcher. And they ended up losing because of it. And from that day forward, whenever he went to that one particular hospital, he wasn't allowed to move patients over from the one stretcher to the other or wheel the stretcher around the ER.
Wow.
FYI.
Wow.
And maybe that could be the type of thing where, God forbid, you know, this is the type of argument like you guys just made, where if you did check, let's say you're checking the fluids in the ambulance, and it splashes on your face and you get burned or something like that because it's hot.
Well, but that's
first
exactly
thing the boss
the point.
Will say. The first thing the boss will say is, "What are you checking the fluid for?
Exactly.
What are you, a mechanic?"
But at the same time, we've had crews that have gotten in trouble when they've run their ambulance on a quart of oil. You know,
how would
I mean,
know that?
Because the ambulance broke down or a warning light went off and it stopped functioning, and they went and checked it out with the mechanic, and they said, "Oh, you're 5 quarts down." And so the crews got in trouble for not ever checking the fluid in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but at the same time, where is that? You know, is it part of your SOPs? If it's part of your SOPs, then there should be training. There should be even a test so much that you know how to do it without hurting yourself. But, you know, we're talking about, you know, and that's where we sort of get off the deep end of this argument. But in reality, you know, you want to walk around your rig. You know, if you see a puddle of oil, you see a puddle of antifreeze or transmission fluid or whatever, you see a puddle that doesn't belong under the ambulance, you shouldn't be going into that thing and driving it around. You should be reporting it.
That's
so, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. There's, I mean, listen, I think there's two points, sense, two points right? to this argument, you know.
Our job is common sense. There is an aspect that we, you know, look and say, you know, this we sort of diagnose and then treat, right? Isn't common sense sort of part of that, you know, look, evaluate?
Well, the problem with the common sense end of it is that, you know, what happens is that if you end up getting hurt or something, you know, that you will have people, I'm sure you have some people saying, well, what are you doing checking that? That's not part of your job. You're not trained in that, you know, or the person that gets hurt saying, you made me do this, and now, you know, I'm going to sue, I'm going to hold the agency responsible for it, you know. And I guess it's going to depend upon what's written down as far as what your job duties are. If it's written down that that's your job duty and it happens, then, you know, you have an argument. If it's not written down, you're doing it because you feel it's part of your job and it's part of the overall equipment that you're responsible for, then, you know, you might be the one that ends up being, you know, responsible for that injury, your own injury, you know.
I'm happy when there's oxygen in the tank.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of places are, I guess. I mean, well, like I said, back in the day when I first started, that was very, you know, one of those things. You know, you were happy with oxygen in the tank, and you know, you considered cutting 4x4s down to 2x2s. You know, but you know that's like I said, it's that sort of, you know, two sides of the argument, I guess, that I'm trying to, you know, bring out. But I do think that, you know, At the minimum, if you're not working for a place that doesn't encourage you to do that or hasn't trained you to do it, you should at least look around the truck and make sure there's nothing major.
I think that's a good idea.
Leaking and what. And if you see it, don't say, oh, good, we'll be able to go out of service later because the truck will freeze up on the highway.
Make sure the tires aren't flat.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there is the double edge to that storage. You know, if you recall that winter we had a couple of years ago, in the city especially, I mean, I know you guys got snowed in upstate as well, mm-hmm. but in the city we had buses that were jammed, and there were stories all around about how EMS didn't get to patients and failed their response and all that nonsense.
Right.
But on the side, within our world, we heard the rumors of buses that were stranded for 12 hours with no heat, and the crews were stuck in that vehicle or had to get out.
What about the stories from Detroit that they had, you know, where they were broken down on the road with nobody coming to help them, and they were hearing stuff going on around them, and they couldn't do anything about it?
Right.
You know.
Frustrating.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
So check the fluids, people.
Right. Check your tires. Check your fluids. Check. Hey, listen, when you do a rig check, you know, I know that we have a checklist. I'm sure most organizations have a checklist.
Yeah.
There's a part that you check off on that checklist that says your lights are functioning.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, there are other parts that you say your brakes are good, and I'm not sure on how I'm supposed to know that my brakes are good when I'm sitting there in a parked vehicle. But I assume after I start rolling, I'll find out.
Yeah, you gotta do at least, you jump out, and you just, first thing you do is you go about 50 miles an hour and you slam on the brakes and you see.
Right. That's an effective way to do it.
And then you check it. Then you check it.
That's how I was trained.
Right.
Yeah, then you
remember,
check.
Kiddies, you heard it here.
You tell your partner, stand in front. I'm going to come at you, and then I'm going to hit the brakes and see if they work. Just
kidding. I had a car salesman who did that to show us what the automatic braking system was, and
oh yeah,
oh my gosh, she aimed it right at a wall. She slammed on the brakes. She said, "Did you see that? Not skidding." I said, "Just take us back."
Yeah, not skidding.
See,
brakes didn't lock.
You only have to change your underwear.
My wallet's
that
not opening.
That shutter is what you want.
Yeah, my wallet's not going to open.
Can I get it? I love the car, but can I get one without crap on the seats now, please?
Yeah. Unreal.
So, Dave, did you see? Can I get to this, Jim? Or are you saying?
Yeah. I think we've talked about oil and energy.
Did you see the times today? Because I sort of forwarded
that today. That was today.
Sunday. First page. You're hearing this here first because GEMS and EMS One haven't even caught up to it yet.
I thought EMS One had it on this.
Are you talking about going in with tactical?
Yes.
Oh yeah, sure. I read that. Of course.
New York Times today, right?
It was there on the New York Times. Yes, it was.
Department of Homeland Security has decided that. Instead of sitting on the sidelines, we damn well better be running.
I don't know that they use the word better.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Hey, there is tactical EMS. Did you get trained in that?
I have done a TCCC program, yes. Mm. But that's not, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of levels of tactical here.
Yes, there is.
And so.
But they're talking about warm zones, and they're talking about having police escorts and stuff like that when you do it. And they're not looking for the regular paramedic or firefighter to run in with no protective gear and no police escort. They're looking to run in when the shooter might still be active. Somewhere in the building or somewhere on the scene, but you're going into, if you're trained, like you said, and you have the equipment and you've got the police escort for yourself, that you're going to go in and you're going to stop immediate bleeding and drag the person off the scene.
Yeah.
Kind of stay in play.
Yeah, but they also used an example of the Boston bombings.
But the thing with that it's very misleading in the article, because the Boston bombing was a unique situation where you had so many medical providers that were there because it was a controlled MCI to begin with. So when it happened, these people being people that want to help and people that are dedicated to EMS and the medical field, whether they were doctors or whatnot, you know, their drive was to go and help. You know, they weren't in something like you and I. Let's say we're in an ambulance and we dispatch to a call, and they say it could be an active shooter. Do not enter the scene until, you know, police say it's okay. That's a different story, because now you've got your pre-arrival instructions. You've got, you know, information before you get there as what's going on. With the bombing, you know, it was something that just happened.
When they used the bombing as an example.
They shouldn't have used it as an example.
I understand.
Totally different. That wasn't.
I get where you're upset with them using it, because it really doesn't meld well with what they're asking. But what they're saying about the bombing is because people didn't wait and were right there, that people's lives were saved because less time was eaten up, you know, to get to them. So what they're saying here is that in like a school shooting or something like that, or an active shooter where there's something going on, that the value of having EMS going in, even though they are in danger now, means the possibility of more lives being saved. And that has always been sort of that weird fulcrum that has defined EMS, that aspect of, well, we always wait until the scene is clear because you can't help anybody if you're part of the problem, to now we're sort of falling on to the side of, you know, well, we need to rush in because we might be able to help the situation, and the chances of us getting injured is worth the extra gain in saving life. And I really have to stand back and say, well, what are you asking us to do? And then, you know, as another point to just bring up, at what point then is it appropriate that we be run by a fire service and not a police service? Because Lord help us if we run ourselves. We know that's, you know, that's out of the question.
Well, my thing is, I don't know.
I always get you to stop in your tracks.
I'm not
right
quite
there.
Sure, Josh, that they're asking us to rush in. I think they're looking to have providers trained in you know, the tactical, you know, EMS. You know, most of the, I mean, the tactical EMS things that I've seen, when the paramedic goes in, if it's still a danger, the escort he has isn't just some cop standing next to him with a gun. It's usually a few cops that are around them, around the medic, as he's treating the person and getting the person off the, you know, package and off of the, you know.
Yeah, and that's, that, you know, yeah, but that's a battlefield or a tac medic situation.
Right, but there's training that goes involved with that. And
there's training and there's equipment.
Yeah, and the thing, and then, but then you go back.
As part of a team.
And then, but then the whole thing with that, too, is that you go back to, you know, pretty much what we talked about in the first half of the show, is that it's going to cost money to train people to do that, you know.
Well, beyond money, you know, let's get into the big famous battle. I mean, this is Dave, you know, this is right up your alley of the conversations we've had about, you know, 75 or 175 fire chiefs, you know, in the area that you live. Who owns it? Who is the one that's going to take ownership?
I like how the article talks about, you know, the firemen. Oh, there's no difference in going to a burning building. They go into burning structure fires, so it's just as dangerous.
Well, wait, was that in the Times or was did you see? Oh, okay, I don't recall that actually, but okay.
I memorized the entire article.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, well, you're good that way. I know you have a didactic memory.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is you know, the last time I checked, fires don't shoot back at you.
Yeah. That's why I don't know how you can compare the two. You know, it's ridiculous to me, but.
Well, but, and that traditionally, you know, these sort of situations that they're saying that we should be in, these warm zones, and they you know, they reference several times the active shooter environment is a police-controlled situation where they have special police teams. And there is actually a part, and this is the, and I know where you're deriving the idea of special training, but there has been a motion or movement within the police world that the cops, you know, traditionally, like in Columbine, there was almost an hour before police got into scenario because they were waiting for the specially equipped SWAT members to go in. And now they're saying, well, regular police should go in. But regular police don't have the equipment that a SWAT team has.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, that's a whole other argument. That's an argument that could be on a law enforcement podcast where they should be talking about that as well. You know, that every cop isn't trained in that sort of response either, you know. Especially when you talk about, you know, some areas that aren't big urban areas where you've got smaller places where you don't have, you know, the personnel to respond to these types of things. You know, the smaller areas, and you're expecting, you know, local police and whatnot to respond appropriately to, you know, an active shooter thing without having the equipment and the training.
I think a lot of this stuff is hindsight. So much hindsight. So much of it. It will always be hindsight. When you look at what we did at 9/11, I know this is such a delicate topic because, I mean, my concept, I'm not saying that they're not heroes, of course they're heroes, but had all of us said, you know what, this is really too dangerous. Am I really going to run up 80 flights of steps and carry somebody down? Am I in that kind of condition that I can run up 80 flights of steps in my bunker gear with a Scott pack on and carrying some tools with me? And when I get there, I'm going to have the energy to carry somebody down. Is this the kind of fire that I can put out with a hose? I'm going to go back even before that. Go back to Oklahoma City. And they had that event. And when they finally set up incident command, the incident commander told everybody to get out of the building. And everybody, you know, they said, but, you know, I've got a patient here. I'm just getting through. They need my help. And he said, get out of the building, get out of the building. If that building had collapsed, and by the way, they got out. They waited, you know, they did what they had to do to make sure there was no secondary or tertiary event. And then they went back in and they did their stuff. I think that man, the incident commander, was a hero. Now, I'm just going to ask you, what would have happened if we applied the same thing to the World Trade Center, if the incident commander had said, and everybody had listened, step away from the building. Everybody, I want us a half-mile perimeter from that building until we know it's secure.
We wouldn't have lost a fraction of the first responders we had lost. That's the bottom line there.
Because, I mean, you know, you read that article.
When you know what, you know, when you know what went down, you know, down there, you know that the people who were lost were lost. There was nobody except for the few in the first few hours before the buildings collapsed that were saved. You know, I mean, at that, you know, and there were a damn few of those people. I mean, there were, you know, people from falling glass, and certainly the fires are the most dramatic stories. But when you consider the percentage of people saved versus the percentage lost, and then the percentage of first responders lost, you have to take pause.
Yeah, in the article, in the text of the article, it says, you know, big risk, big benefit. That's not always true.
Well, that's funny. In the article, too, how they there was a mention about that.
I bet you got the text of the article.
I saw that.
Yeah. You're referring that in the article, Dave, where the guy from FEMA says, as we say, risk a little to save a little, risk a lot to save a lot. What the hell does that mean? What kind of asinine...
Well, that's a fire saying.
You know,
that's a hazmat.
You're risking a lot, but, you know, when you risk a lot with some of the things that we do in this, in our job, and the firefighters doing their job, and the police in their job, you're risking things it's a calculated risk. It's not a blind running into places without understanding what's going on, having the proper training, you know, and things like that. I mean, you know, as it is now, you know, a lot of people in EMS, we do get some training in awareness, and we're much more situationally, I think, aware than we used to be when it comes to how we're responding. And there is a lot more, sort of interagency training for these things and whatever, but nowhere near the training where we would use somebody, you know, would risk something like going into a warm zone, you know, an unsecure active shooter scenario, without having the proper equipment and the proper training, to go along with it. I mean, you read some of the comments from the Facebook post on this, and, you know, you get people, pretty a lot of assholes making stupid comments, but then you also have a lot of people who pretty much saying what we're saying, you know, yes, with the proper training, the proper equipment, then it would warrant, you know, our response. You know, it's a good way to get into it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not, you know, pull up and run in because it worked at the Boston bombing. It'll work when, some crazy person's running around the movie theater with an automatic weapon.
But now, you know, if we step back, the problem that we're going to face here and what we need to consider is an article like this basically takes what is good and works in a small subset of a larger, more dysfunctional system, and says, you know, you need to apply that part that is good and works. The problem is the system that it's in, I think, by implementing this idea, the majority of the places don't have the structure to implement it correctly. And therein lies the danger to us as practitioners. You know, not so much that properly trained and properly outfitted, you know, that's a given, you know, and you have people who are willing to take that risk. I mean, certainly the guys who fight fires, you know, in the systems that are trained and equipped, are they risking their lives? They certainly are, but they're doing it under hopefully controlled and rehearse circumstances where they understand the risks and they can take calculated, they can have calculated exposure. But what we're talking about here is something where you have a crossover in jurisdictions, and I'm really talking about fire and police, and I'm going to harp on this because who owns this? And you're going to have fire services that are supporting police that how are they supposed to be equipped? How are they supposed to have that ability to make that judgment? And how are they supposed to go in there and make those calculated risks on a basis that you know, frames our initial, our entire sort of outlook, you know, of safety first. You know, everything about EMS is built around safety first.
You know, scene is safe, blah, 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 except when it's really not safe, then you can go in.
But there you go. You know, so how do you make that all, how do you work that equation out?
I don't know.
Well, I didn't mean to close down the conversation here.
Well, you know, as soon as we throw in emergency medical technicians who get picked off, they'll say, well, maybe this is not a good idea.
Yeah. All right, listen, guys, I just want to talk a little bit about the sponsor real quick. So we'll take a two-minute break here, and then we'll come back. I have something else that I'm sure Josh is going to enjoy.
Josh is going to be having a great time.
You're twisting that a little bit in this discussion, so we're right back on.
This episode of EMS Office Hours is sponsored by EMS Manager. They have been consistently helping EMS agencies save time and energy with their innovative web-based software for staff scheduling and management. They have a mobile web app that's accessible from smartphones and other mobile devices with an easy-to-use web interface that's viewable from anywhere on the World Wide Web. You can check your own schedule, and managers and staff can both oversee, manage, and make changes to employee schedules from anywhere. Anthony Tucci, who is the deputy chief in Western Berks EMS, that's over in Reading, Pennsylvania, shares with us that his overtime has been cut by 50% since he started using EMS Manager a year ago. He says our overtime went from 4,000 hours to last year to 2,000 hours this year. And he says this has been a huge financial savings for his agency. And why not? EMS Manager is affordable. It's priced based on the size of an organization. And because it's web-based, your employee schedule and software is located over in the cloud. And that means that there's no additional IT costs that you've got to worry about. And then there's always free training. There's free tech support and free system software updates. So if you want to try this out for your system, go check it out. There's a free customizable trial of EMS Manager. You can get it at emsmanager.net. I want to thank EMS Manager for sponsoring EMS Office Hours and the other shows from the ProMed Network. EMS Manager is proud to support EMS providers and managers through this sponsorship, and they support what we do. Go show your support for them, guys. Take a few minutes and sign up. Go get a free trial at emsmanager.net. Show them that you appreciate their support by trying out the software. Visit emsmanager.net. It's a LADtech EMS Manager. It's for online employee scheduling and workforce management. And don't forget, if you do try it out, make sure you tell them that you heard it here on EMS Office Hour and that Jim and Josh sent you on over.
This is paramedic Greg Fries from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, and Center Alert Solutions, the EMS Educast, and Everyday EMS Tips. You're listening to EMS Office Hours with my good friend Jim Hoffman. Enjoy.
All righty. So,
Greg's a friend of mine, too.
Nah, not really.
Well, he hates your guts. I feel bad. No, he doesn't. Don't say that.
He said he hates you. Said he wish you'd
in fact, that's why he only listens to half the show, to listen for you.
He said he wished you were going to active shooter with no vest.
No, that's just
no vest and a hat that says with a bullseye on it.
Right, right. Thank you. You know, you
target.
Can think,
yeah,
really, bullseye. Truly. Yes, I already have one on my back. It's called EMS.
So let me ask you this, Josh. You know, all this stuff with this whole you know, responding into warm zones, and it's additional training.
Come to the great and mighty Oracle. I will answer all.
Yeah. Additional training and additional equipment and responsibility.
Right.
You know, so show me the money.
You want to get paid for the risk?
Well, I mean, you know, it's yet another thing that they're tacking
money?
On.
I'm sorry. We have volunteers who will do that for free, Jim.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me say that again.
You know, that's a T-shirt, Josh. We can get a T-shirt. You can make a T-shirt with that.
I don't think it would sell too well.
Yeah. Maybe it could say like the T-shirt could say in print, in quotation marks, you know, volunteers, the new technical EMS, something like that.
Is that sort of akin to Blue Canaries?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
No, I mean, honestly, though, this is another thing getting tacked on, you know, in addition to all the other skills and medications and training that we're taking on at both paramedic and EMT levels, you know, and, you know, where's the compensation for it? Because training like this is not the type of thing you're going to go one time, oh, you're good, all right, go ahead, the helmet, have fun. No, this is going to be an ongoing training. The people, you know, the medics and EMTs
I'm wondering here. I have a side thing here. Do you think our sports world would be as interesting if we sent in part-time volunteers to play the games instead of professional sports stars?
Josh, that's another podcast. You open that can of worms. We only got about 15 minutes left of the show, and we don't want
to
be.
And we still have to answer questions.
We're not going to be getting that. We're not going to be getting those worms back in the can.
Well, I'm just putting it out there. Yeah, Pandora in their box.
Yeah.
Few tricks. Never mind.
I mean, really, this is the type of thing where you're going to have departments trying to get increasing their budgets just for the training and equipment. You know, because like I said, you're not going to, it's not the type of thing, like intubation and everything else that we do. You don't do it once in school and then set it and forget it type thing. You've got to keep training on it. You've got to, you know, keep practicing and be proficient at it. So when you have to use it on real life, you know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah,
and
but, you
this
know.
This is the same type of thing. And so where's the money coming from? You know, I like how FEMA says, oh, yeah, everyone's going to do this, and it's great, and all. Who's paying for it? You're paying, just forget about paying providers and ongoing training for years to come. Who's paying for just the initial training?
And honestly, I think that could be an entire subject, an entire podcast, a subject on its own. Let me attack this from a slightly different angle, because, you know, we sort of glossed over this. And I'm not 100% sure we're all of the same minds. Is this really a good idea? I mean, when you've seen, you know, and I comment that with the full knowledge that tactical medics are a real function. There's a real discipline, and they serve a real purpose. Okay, they've shown it a million times on the battlefield. They are now you know, the back end of or the heart in some cases of SWAT teams that you know, specialty teams that go in, but mm-hmm. cops on the street don't have medics that ride with them, you know. I mean, there's
well, that's
I think I have the answer. I have the
okay.
answer.
Thank God.
On the battlefield, what they're doing now is they're training, and I could be wrong, but I think I'm right. They're training all.
Sounds like a song.
Infantry case. Folk. Infantry folk, not medics, to stop bleeding with tourniquets, do a needle decompression, and some other real basic stuff.
Yeah.
Which is the real fast life-saving stuff. Let's right. train the police officers to do that, have them put the people on boards, take them away with all of that first stuff done, and then bring it to us in a cold zone where I want to stay.
Yeah.
And I'll do the rest.
Yeah, I mean, that's another element of it. I mean, because then you're training, like you said, Dave, you're going to be training law enforcement to do the basic things of
you know, life saving.
They're trained to do that.
Stopping the bleeding, you know, and getting them off the scene. And then we'll do the rest when
they're trained to be on that scene.
Right, exactly. So instead of training us.
They have.
But essentially now you're blurring the lines between EMS and PD.
I'm not at all.
PD.
They did it.
No, you're saying PD now take on this other function. And I think it's a great argument. Don't get me wrong. I'm not arguing against you. But now you're saying PD take on this entire other function of life saving.
No, it's just special situations. It's minimal training. And when I say minimal, we're not talking hundreds of hours of training. We're talking about minimal training that they've done. Widespread in the military, because on the battlefield you don't always have a medic. You have, and I understand they go, everybody's being issued tourniquets. Maybe they're all being issued a 14 gauge needle. Maybe they're not, but I, you know, and what do they call the Ashrokin?
The chest seals.
The chest seals. Yeah. They're getting some sort of a chest seal, and let them do that stuff. And I think that they're better trained for those situations than training me to go into that situation.
I think the training, Dave, to train a police officer in a basic thing like that, and pretty much what is it? It's really a first responder, you know, a CFR.
Lower. It's not a whole course.
It's not even that, right. And compared to training us in tactical response and equipping us with equipment and ongoing training and everything like that, you can do it with police officers so that you've got them. And like you said, it's not about, you know, long-term care in a warm zone. It's not about anything like that. It's about getting them off the scene and, you know, stopping the bleeding, getting them off of the scene.
And they're more likely to be in the warm zone than in the hot zone, and they'll be there for their partners when their partners need it.
Yeah. Well, I think there's another thing that's not well defined here is that, you know, what is the warm zone? What is the hot zone? Because when you read that article, a lot of what they were saying sounded like the hot zone to me. Mm-hmm. If I'm going into a school where you're still hearing gunfire, you know, to attend to the first person that I come across in this person's path,
that's hot zone.
That's hot zone, right?
It's all hot zone until we know it.
Yeah.
Until we have somebody confined to a room.
As long as there's threat, that's hot zone. So what is the idea of warm zone anyway? Warm zone, hot zone, really only a warm zone only really applies when you're talking about an area where you can transition, you know, to cold, and usually it only applies to hazmat, you know, where there's a point when, you know, you're not taking, there's not actively contaminated, there's not contamination, there's contaminated, there's decontamination going on, and that you have to be, you know, in an exposure area, but you're basically transitioning somebody to the cold zone. I think in a danger, in a bomb or a active shooter, there is no warm zone. Where's the warm zone? Behind the guy with the vest? Behind the guy with the M4?
Yeah, I just think this whole article, I think we've already, you know, pretty much debunked the entire thing because it's just such nonsense.
But it's not, you know, it's going to be out there.
With it.
You know, I mean, it's out there.
Because we're not, you know, and like we said before, too, most police officers aren't trained in that type of response as well. You know, and they have a thing in the article. What did it say? A half an hour or something like that before anybody entered the building, before mm-hmm. police officers entered the building, and they're the ones with the guns.
Right.
You know, same thing's going to happen with us as well. If you've got tactical medics that have the training and have the vests and the helmets and stuff, and they are responding with the SWAT teams, they're going to have to wait until they're all there and the SWAT team's there. You're not talking about the ambulance. The everyday ambulance that can get to a scene usually within 10 minutes is not going to be running into these calls. It's not happening. You know,
but
so
that's
it's so misleading.
Exactly. But with this sort of thought out there, you're going to have people when – mark my words, man. The next time that this happens, you're going to have people entering the scene because the police are entering the scene and they know about this. This thought, this idea, and they're going to be bringing EMS in there with them.
I don't care what the New York Times says. I'm not, you know.
You know, it starts here. It's not, first of all, the New York Times just reported it. It came out of DHS. But the second part is this is going to spread like wildfire. And there's at least one good reason, or one reason why it's going to spread like wildfire, because you have a lot of people in EMS who are frustrated cops.
Well, yeah, and that is and we've talked about that before on the show, you know, that whole angle of it too.
Right.
Hey, listen, you know, you can do. You know, they talk about how with the Boston bombing and you know the quick action save lives, and that's why they're making this decision. That's how you're doing it. One thing, because of one incident, you're going to say
no. I don't. They're not saying because of one thing. They're saying because of these events where people have died because they waited for help.
Yeah, but you know what? You know, as our good friend Tim often says, where's the research in that? How do you prove it? That's why the people died. Listen, you know, people die from trauma most of the time. You're not getting them back from trauma things.
Right.
You know, so it's like, and all this nonsense about risking a lot to gain a lot. What are you gaining? You can be dragging dead bodies out of a building. Oh, I got another dead body, you know.
I wonder what OSHA would have to say about the risk.
Yeah, that's the thing too. It's like that's what I'm saying too. This is something that FEMA is saying. You've got to have, you know, state agencies adopting this, and you know, and then the local, more regional sort of agencies adopting this type of thing, and the training, and all. It's you know, I don't know. To me,
To do it properly, yes. But well,
you're talking about Johnny Yahoo, Josh, that's in the ambulance with his partner. Goes, come on, we can go in. FEMA
and there's
says,
a lot.
Hey.
And what about Johnny Yahoo that's in the cop car that's running in as well, saying, come on behind me, come on with me.
You know, the problem is that there is a certain and I know the feeling. I've had the feeling in the past when I've been on scenes where I found myself in a dangerous situation that I shouldn't have been in, because my drive to help and to you know, do my job was greater than my immediate safety. I didn't think about
are you unique in that? Jim?
No, I'm not. I think that there's a lot of us that are like that, and I think that Boston bombing did what it did, because you had people who were like that, and they had that drive. They couldn't say, wait a minute, there could be a secondary explosion, it could be chemicals, it could be whatever. No, there's people screaming, there's people need help, we're right here, I'm not waiting, I'm going to go and help somebody.
Right.
And especially when you've got, you know, situations where you've got, like the Boston bombing, you've got civilians who are running into the scene, pulling people out. I mean, how does that look for the emergency professionals to be standing on the side and go, no, we can't go in, it's not safe yet?
Well, how about civilians who have now read this article and think, well, if EMS can go in there, they can go in there, because EMS only goes where it's...
Well, the article also mentions, too, about how, you know, there is a push for, especially with the active shooter stuff, where they're trying to tell people, you know, to make that decision of run, hide, or fight decision, rather than just sort of hide and waiting for help.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? And actually, I was...
That's actually being taught in corporations all around America.
You know,
right?
A place that I worked, you know, they did that with a... You know, they did a whole thing with that, and it was a whole combined thing with the civilians, the police, and EMS, and figuring it all out. And it was weird, because they actually, you know, tagged EMS and police as victims, because they went in too soon.
Right. You know? Right. And you know, we've all played those scenarios where the instructor has done that. But you know, another point here, just to mention, is that active shooter is not new. I mean, you know, we all think it's new because it got, you know, really raised in the vernacular.
So, yeah.
Well, because of like Columbine and going forward from that, because, we, you know, for the first time we've actually had these major killings and shootings in schools. But, you know, if you think about it, I remember all from, you know, what does the term going postal come from?
You want a lot of stamps, and you want them now.
God, Really? Did you have to go there? Did you have to say
stamps.
That?
I want forever stamps.
Right. It had nothing to do with Postal Service employees that were pushed beyond the reason, you know, the edge of sanity and came into
I'm pushed on the edge of sanity every day.
Yeah, that's your excuse.
Every day
to it.
On the edge of sanity.
But the point is, it's nothing new. And all of a sudden, we're treating this thing like, oh, my God, it's something, you know, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. But, huh?
Yeah.
Wait till I go postal.
Well, listen, we'll wrap it up there. We only got about 5 minutes left. I do want to mention one question that I have. And it's a question that...
One question we're going to get to today.
Yeah, I know. We only got about 5 minutes, but... I don't think there's the right answer for this. And this is even a friggin' podcast, to be honest. But when I first got this question, I was thinking this could really be part of the podcast, because it's a thing between EMT, intermediates and paramedics. And when you get an intermediate who says, well, you know, I learned how to do, you know, whatever in school, whether it's intubation or maybe it's IO, okay. And but my where I work, they either don't have ENT eyes, they're not hiring ENT, either hire paramedics and EMT, they don't really hire EMT eyes, or the protocols don't say I can do it, but I learned it in school. It was part of my certification, part of my curriculum, but the protocols say that I can't do intubation. I can only do, you know, let's say a blind intubation devices. You know, how do you sort of, you know, the question I guess is, you know, what do they do? Do they do the skill anyway, or do they follow the guideline and their agency, policies, you know? To me, the right answer is, yeah, you're going to follow your protocol. You're going to follow your agency guidelines.
I don't think there's another answer.
Without a license.
But people feel, a lot of these people, you know, it's like I talk myself blue in the face. They feel that I've learned it and the state recognizes it. So since the state is bigger than my agency, I can do it.
Oh, no. Oh, no. The
you know what I mean?
State doesn't recognize them to do it. The state recognizes that they can do it under the license of a physician who says they can do it.
I wish Tim were here right now, because
that's
this would
what
be
the
a
state
great,
recognizes.
Because he goes off on that. You're not working under a license of a physician. And I'm like, yeah, you are. Yes, you are. Right.
Yeah, you are. There's a direct relationship, and I wouldn't listen. You know, I once saw somebody do a cesarean section. So these two paramedics in New Jersey have this woman who's virtually dead from trauma. She's dead from trauma. And they call up medical control, and they say to the medical control doc, who's there for his first day, he's probably a resident, but he's there for his first day at medical control. They say, she's dead. She looks like she's about 9 months pregnant. Do you want us to do an emergency C-section? So the doc says,
Yeah.
Go ahead. That sounds like a great idea.
And
because that's what you're trained in, right?
I remember this story.
Yeah. And they did it. And what happened?
They got fired.
They got arrested, didn't they?
Didn't
they got sued. The doctor got fired and sued.
I don't think the doctor got fired. I don't think
the doctor got fired. What are you talking about, Josh? That's really insane.
I thought everybody that touched that melted down.
I didn't hear that the doctor got anything other than you should have known better than to do that.
Yeah.
However, medics lost their job. You don't do what you're not hired and trained and licensed and certified to do, where you're hired to do it.
Yeah.
I can't say anything else more strongly than that. You're asking me, that's my answer.
And I mean, I agree, and that's the stance that I took, and that's the answer that I pretty much gave, is that
you right know, answer.
There's the other side of that too, and I think that's
but they get so
they get
indignant though when you suggest to them that because they know it, you know.
How about the student who is doing this as practice, and they're not on their preceptor's bus? They're at work, and they're backing up a medic unit or something like that, and the medics allow them to go do it. Who's responsible then?
The medic.
No shit. But, I mean, even if it's successful, everybody there is at risk.
Yep, you're right. So what do you do?
Always,
the right answer. You know the right answer.
Right. You always have to stand back to the most appropriate framework in order to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, listen. I worked at a place where the EMT who was in medic school intubated somebody and intubated the stomach because they decided they were going to BLS the call, and the paramedic was driving. Oh no, wait. They were EMT truck, but it was the paramedic on the EMT on the truck, and they wanted to go. They want to be paramedics. The agency wanted to be ALS providers, so they had some equipment on the truck, but they weren't approved yet for ALS, level care. But the one EMT who was in paramedic school looked into the front, in between the cab and the back of the truck, and he goes, "Hey, this guy really needs to get intubated.
You mind if I do it?"
No, he said, "I'm almost a medic. I can do it." And the medic said, "Yeah, sure."
Right.
But he intubated the stomach, and the guy friggin' died, and it was a whole, shitstorm. The guy got kicked out of the medic school.
Yeah, but the thing that people argue is that everybody does it. Yeah, but, you're doing it with a defined risk, so just
not everybody does it. Well, does it happen? It happens.
Yeah.
Do people get caught? Yes. Do people lose? Do you throw people out of paramedic classes for that? Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Well, is that always been the case, Dave, or is that certainly, as things have tightened up?
When they get caught, they've done a heinous thing. It's not okay. And the institution running the classes can't accept it, tolerate it. They have to say, you couldn't do that. We told you can't do that. You did it. And you know what? I mean, if it happens on my watch, I report it to the state. You were an EMT when you did that. You practiced outside your level of practice. I have to tell the state you did that. But I meant to do something good. Yeah, you didn't.
Well, wait a second. Even if they're a student?
If they're a student on an ambulance that is as a preceptor who's in the position to precept them, and they're approved to start IVs, then start IVs. Did you get approved to start intubating? Well, I intubated a mannequin twice. Did they approve you to intubate patients in the field? No, but I've done the mannequin twice. Oh, give this a try.
No, that's different. No, that's different. That's just downright foolish. But if the guy has been starting IVs and you know him as a, from being a preceptor, and then you meet in a different environment.
You're only going to get the agency line from me. You don't do it. You don't do it unless you're supposed to do it.
Actually, I was trying to give you a softball there that you can just sort of hit.
I hit it.
Yeah.
I hit it. That's it.
It's a lot like, duh, come on, That's that common sense thing again.
We'd just be a little bit wrong. No.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit wrong. I'm just a little bit doing it wrong. So. All right, guys. Well, let me end it there. I thank you for joining us, as always, Dave.
I love being here.
I think we had a good conversation tonight. Listen, no answers here, just our opinions, and hopefully to, keep the conversation going about things like this so that,
somebody out there that might be thinking, hey, I can go into an active shooter now and think twice, you know, and think a little bit about the consequences of it. So, again, I appreciate it, guys, and hopefully we'll see you, I don't know about next week, I have to see. I might be busy next week.
Oh, really? Are you going to be doing a ride-along, or?
No, I got to, I might be traveling, but I might be able to do it from the road, so we'll see what happens. Hmm. You know, this holiday
Want us thing. To do it without you, Jim?
Well, you know, that's a that's a possibility, you know. I could always try to give Josh the
that's a dangerous thing.
Overview of the game, how to use the massive podcasting studio and all the controls and buttons and everything else, you know. And if you think you can do it, maybe you know, we can do that.
Maybe Josh can.
Yeah, I'm sure he's very capable.
Oh, Lord. Are we actually having this discussion on air?
You're going to put Josh in the hot zone.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely. No problem. Let's fly with this thing. With or without you, Jim, we'll make EMS office hours happen. The doors will be open.
Right. All right, guys. That's it. I guess we'll talk to you later. Don't forget, check out Josh's website, Get a Wrench, wantnew.com.
You know, I just, by the way,
enough is enough now.
Fifth patent, thank you.
Stop looking at them on the website. I know the colors are nice and everything else.
Yeah, make your decision.
Yeah,
great.
Buy a wrench.
Do it.
All right, because otherwise you're going to, one day, and this, I'm going to tell you, this is what happens. And this is what happens to me with other stuff that I get a lot of times where I don't buy stuff. Not just an EMS, anything, you know, where you say, oh, you know, I really need one of those. And you don't get it, and then you turn around, you need it. Oh, crap, I got to get one of those. Right? And then the next time, and then, you know, then you blow it off. You blow it off. You don't get it. And then you turn around and you're doing something again. You, oh, my God, I need that. What is it? I didn't buy it. And then, you know, that's the same type of thing. And that's what people are going to end up doing with this wrench. So stop. Don't do it. Go and buy one. It'll be the best oxygen wrench you will ever own.
It'll last a lot longer than that triple latte foam double cappuccino.
Right.
You know,
absolutely. And it's priced just right for Christmas.
Absolutely.
$200 a wrench.
You know, I'm actually giving a 50% discount now. So
only $100. Only $100 per wrench, right. And don't forget, $99 for shipping and handling.
And don't forget the extra silk purse to carry it.
That's what you should do. You should sell with silk purses. You hang the silk purse from your utility belt.
Right.
And you put your wrench. You put your wrench in there daintily.
EMS bling.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. Exactly. It is. It's EMS bling.
That's what you got to do. You got to come up. You got to figure a way to bling out the wrenches. Bling them out. You get some.
Those rhinestones. I'll get the. What is that rhinestone machine that they sell on TV?
You sell the kit that the people do it themselves. You sell them a bling out your wrench, and you sell a thing with rhinestones and fake rubies in there and stuff, and you know, and they can bling out their wrench. So let's say they bought a black one or a blue one a while ago. They're bored with the color. They don't want to buy a new one, so they're gonna bling it out.
You know, that's an excellent idea, actually, for my next wrench that's coming out.
Or you can go ahead and get yourself your very own wantnew.com fathead that you can put on your wall at your house. And also, there's also a Jim Hoffman fathead if you want to put on the wall in your room as well.
What about your Jim Hoffman bobblehead?
Well, I don't really have a big Jim Hoffman bobblehead.
But we will now.
I couldn't take that humiliation.
You know, the trouble is that I would look at it and you'd always be yessing me to death. So right. I'm not sure that
I
really want to
put the fat head. You know, the fat head, you've seen those commercials?
No.
You haven't seen the fat head commercial?
No.
Oh, my God. What rock are you hiding under?
Actually, you know, I am suffering tonight because Walking Dead is not going to be around until Thursday, until February.
Yeah.
So, you know. Really, go easy. Yeah. All right.
All right, guys.
That's it.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll talk soon one way or the other. All right.
Sounds like a plan.
Always
and I
a pleasure, folks.
Always is. Thank you, guys.
Everybody, that's it for us. As always, Jim Hoffman for EMS Office Hours. Stay safe.